Hello, I'm Sean Slade and welcome to the Whole Child Podcast. Ask educators why they went into teaching and the majority will respond that they wanted to make a difference in the lives of young people. That initial idealism, however, is often challenged by the realities of heavy workloads, classroom discipline problems, and bureaucratic demands. On this episode of the Whole Child Podcast, our guests will share what led them into teaching, what inspires them, and how they make a difference in their students' lives and learning. From building meaningful relationships or designing innovative programs that help students overcome challenges to raising academic achievement, we are taking steps to focus on the whole child, project by project, classroom by classroom, and school by school. So joining me today are Mark Barnes, a veteran teacher, adjunct professor, international education presenter, and leading authority on student-centered learning and technology integration. He is the creator of the Results-Only Learning Environment, or ROL, a progressive student-centered classroom that eliminates all traditional teaching methods, including grades. He's also the author of the ASCD book, ROL Reversal, Achieving Uncommonly Excellent Results in the Student-Centered Classroom, and ASCD ARIA's publication, The 5-Minute Teacher, How Do I Maximize Time for Learning in My Classroom? We also have Kevin Parr, a fourth grade teacher at Abraham Lincoln Elementary School in Wenatchee, Washington, with degrees in environmental science and elementary education. As a Peace Corps volunteer in Guatemala, he realized his passion for teaching and working with children. A 2014 ASCD Emerging Leader, he is also a regular guest blogger for the Whole Child blog and also in service. Ali Rodman, a 2013 ASCD Emerging Leader, instructional coach and professional development facilitator, who is committed to connecting teachers and administrators to the resources necessary to improve student achievement for all learners. She is a former social studies and alternative education teacher and is currently the Director of Teaching and Learning for Mariana Bracetti Academy Charter School, a K-12 Title I school in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And Joan Young, a teacher and therapeutic coach with 10 years of teaching experience in elementary classrooms and 25 years of experience tutoring students of all ages. She specializes in working with students who need extra support in self-regulation and executive functioning skills. Her principal interests include the application of positive psychology to education, how resilience can help children who have experienced trauma and loss, mindfulness in schools, and teaching through multiple modalities. She is also the author of a new ASCD ARIA publication, Encouragement in the Classroom, How Do I Help Students Stay Positive and Focused? And the blog, Finding Ways for All Kids to Flourish. So welcome, Mark, Kevin, Ali, and Joan.
Good morning.
Sean. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much, Sean.
So, it's great to be here, Sean.
So we'll start with the first question, which is a fairly basic one, which is, why did you get into education? And maybe we'll go through this alphabetically and have Ali kick off the discussion.
Certainly. Thanks so much for having me this morning, Sean. I've always had this passion for learning and figuring out different problems, looking at complicated situations and trying to figure out the way that they work. I can remember sitting on my parents' porch at 6 or 7 years old and playing school with my little sister. And when she didn't understand how certain problems work, just kind of taking it through with her step by step. And I think that passion continued to develop. I took a few career detours along the way and explored some different things. But I always kept coming back to the idea of education and understanding how critical it is. During my high school and college years, I spent a lot of time working with individuals who were hungry and homeless, and that really helped to clarify for me how important education is in one's development and being able to engage in a variety of different things. And so I began to develop a passion, not just for learning and education, but specifically education for students in low-income communities. And I've been proud to work in those communities for over 10 years now.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Joan, can we hear from you?
Sure. Good morning. I'm also really glad to be here. And like Allie said, I also played school, had a big family of lots of kids, and it seemed like someone was always sharing something that they were learning. I did kind of come into teaching in a roundabout way, though. I majored in psychology, got my master's in clinical psych, and became a foster care social worker. And after 7 or 8 years of doing that and sitting in meetings where teachers and other administrators really didn't understand the effects of trauma and loss on these students and their learning, I realized that maybe I could make a bigger impact if I actually went into the classroom and tried to work with 20 students at the same time instead of my caseload, which could be, you know, really huge and not feeling very impactful. So I really wanted to take what I knew from psychology, apply what happens when you look for strengths and you look for those little bright spots of resilience in kids and try to amplify and grow those instead of looking at kids as broken or needing fixing. So I went into teaching and never looked back. So I'm really happy to be here as well.
Very nice. Yeah, so much of the stuff you talk about reminds me. I used to work with Bonnie Bernard in Northern California as well, and much of her resilience research talks about the same thing, about making sure that every child succeeds and every child flourishes, and how we start to really refocus education from a deficit perspective to a strength-based perspective. How about Kevin? Can you, because I think your story is a little bit different as well.
Yeah, it is a little different. Kind of different than Joan and Allie. I come from a big family of teachers, so I spent most of my life trying really hard not to go into education. And then I found myself in the Peace Corps, not knowing the language or the customs or directions or anything that was going on. So the first people I looked to for help were the kids. And some of them were as young as 6 or 7 years old. And they were kind of my lifeline. So through that experience, I started viewing teaching not really as telling people, but more as talking with people and listening and learning. And that really inspired me to get in the classroom and to try to apply that in a classroom setting in schools.
Very nice. And let's finish up with Mark to give your little story about how you got into education.
Thanks, Kevin. I'm thankful for it, I would say that I went through sort of the wrong route to education. And that is that I was, while I was a journalist out of college, I worked for a local newspaper. I started coaching, and I really loved sports and interacting with kids that way. And I wanted to work full time, really coaching kids. And so I said, the best way to do that is to be a teacher. And so the teaching aspect itself was sort of secondary for me. It was just a route for me to do more coaching. And at any rate, after quite a few years, I realized that I wanted to impact kids more in the classroom than on a basketball court or a track or wherever else I might coach them. And eventually actually left coaching completely so that I could concentrate on best practices and improving myself as a teacher. And that's really what, after 20 years, what led me to where I am today with writing some books about experiences and getting out and working with educators to make teaching and learning better.
Yeah, you know what's obviously interesting is that nobody went into teaching to further develop students' math and literacy skills necessarily, but you all have come back from as most teachers do when they talk about why they go into teaching or how they got into teaching, they're talking about making an impact with the students and making a difference with the students. So let's take that a little bit further, because you talked about interest in foster care or homeless individuals or the Peace Corps or coming in via the coaching. And you wanted to make, many of you mentioned that you wanted to make a bigger difference or a bigger impact. So explain to me, and I'll open this up to anybody, what is the difference that you're trying to make? See if you can outline that.
Yeah, I would love to address that. I think that, and for me, it was really important, again, to sort of make that transition away from coaching. I think coaches, athletic coaches, can make a huge impact on kids' lives. You know, a lot of kids have no interest in school other than athletics, so I really I applaud coaches. I don't want this to come off as I think that coaches don't have a value, because they do. But for me, I felt like what I was doing on a basketball court or on a track where I was coaching was certainly helping kids athletically, but there were so many other things missing. That whole idea that kids, the reluctant learner, I think that's really what I wanted to do, was to help the reluctant learner. And that's the kind of kid I was working with in coaching, and they just weren't interested in school. They weren't interested in academics, and I talked to them a great deal about that. And what I learned was that they didn't like school. They had other things going on in life that were so much more important. They came from broken homes. They had to watch their kids because their single parent was maybe at work all day. And another thing was they didn't really like what was happening in the classroom. And that's where that really impacted me, was the idea that kids didn't like learning. And I just thought, you know what, there's got to be a better way than what we do as classroom teachers to engage kids who don't come ready to learn. So what I wanted to do was to create an environment in the classroom that all kids would come in and say, this is fun, it's interactive, it's collaborative, and I enjoy learning.
I think my answer was also going to be sort of along similar lines. One of the ways that I really hope to make a difference with my students is helping them change their ideas about themselves, about who they are as learners. So discovering strengths that they have, discovering their passions, being able to take all of that into the classroom and actually have someone care about it. So I think that when we create that environment where kids' natural interests, things that they actually are good at, can be integrated with the things that are challenging to them, we find that they're willing and much more able to take on challenges. So I think for me, helping students believe that they can do pretty much anything with the right support and the right mindset is huge to me.
I'd like to jump in. I think the believing in themselves part is a huge part of the difference that we're trying to make as educators. And I just like to add that it's not necessarily only their ability that we're trying to have them believe in, but also for some kids that do have a lot of ability, believing in themselves that it's okay to fail sometimes. And also for kids that think about things maybe just a little bit differently, to have them know that their thoughts are valued, even if they're not, let's say, the norm of what a teacher might be expecting them to express. So I think believing in themselves goes beyond just, you know, pure ability in different areas.
And I think a big part of making a difference in students' lives is really meeting them where they are. When they come to school, they're not coming with just their minds. They're coming with their entire being. And as educators, it's important to recognize that and to embrace that, not as a challenge, but as an opportunity for growth, and really seeing the strengths in each individual child. And as Joan had said earlier, helping them to shine.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like most of you are talking as well. When I try and scale down what you're all mentioning, it's having students realize their own potential, for that they can achieve a wide range of things, whether it's the reluctant learner who's been turned off school or education, or whether it's someone who's not been shown what strengths they have, or even, Kevin, when you were talking about not just ability, I wrote down not just ability, but understanding that they have the capability to achieve. And so it may not even be changing their actual skills, but sometimes it's just changing their mindset to have them open up to see that this is a possibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, let's take it a little bit further. So I wonder if any of you have any examples about how you know when you've made a difference in a student's life. And this could be maybe an example from classrooms, or from even coaching, or even from interactions outside the classroom as well.
I guess I would just go back to the having students believe in themselves. And when you see a student actually get to that point where they believe in themselves and they realize they did something that maybe they were scared to do or didn't know they could do to begin with, and when you see that look in their face and the excitement, I think for me that's when you know that you've made a difference. When it goes from the teacher believing in them to them believing in themselves, I think that's the difference.
Yeah, I agree with that. This is Mark again. For me, one of the big things was, you know, Sean, you mentioned it, when you see kids maybe later, maybe after they're your students, there's a few kids that when you have them as students will, you know, always come up to you and say, hey, thanks, or I learned this, or I appreciate this or that, but those are few and far between. And what I've always appreciated was a few years later seeing a kid that maybe was really struggling throughout the year and was that student who just really didn't enjoy learning. And you see them later and you see their growth. You see that they are now performing well. You know, I had one specific kid came up to me in the mall, and this was probably 5 or 6 years after I had him in middle school. And this was a kid you would never target as going to college. He just had no interest and had low grades across the board. And he came running up to me in the mall and said, hey, Mr. Barnes, I'm so excited to see you, and I wanted to let you know that I'm in college. And boy, that really does your heart good.
As an instructional coach, I spend a lot of time working with teachers and sitting down one-on-one with our students to conference just about their progress. And I think what's so inspiring for me, and one of the ways that I know that we as educators make a difference, is when students are able to communicate their own progress independently. So when a student is able to come up to me and say, hey, Ms. Rodman, I know we talked about moving, 10%, I moved 12 or 14%, and to just see that gleam in their eyes and know that they believe that they can do it and they're so proud of themselves.
I think that that's definitely an indicator when students start to own their progress and we teach them to reflect on where they are. When I taught kindergarten, I called it the paper parade, where kids would come up to me and show me their work and say, is this okay? Is this okay? And I taught them to evaluate their own work and put however many smiley faces they thought that their hard work deserved. So when they start looking to themselves for that validation and they realize that they're the ones who know how hard they work, they're the ones who know how much progress they have, and that we are sort of auxiliary to that process, I think that's really key. And I also love that with social media now, parents can find us and reach out to us and tell us how their kids are doing and how that one little thing we said has made a difference to their child. So there's so many opportunities now to stay connected that maybe we didn't have before.
Yeah, that's a true point. We often talk about Twitter or social media in terms of even professional development or learning for teachers, but it's got to also increase that interaction. You know, once students have left the school, moved on in life, then I'm sure that many more of those stories that I believe it was Mark that was talking about are probably going to be happening to teachers about saying, you made a difference and thanks very much. And because sometimes the immediate reaction is that spark in the eye of the student when they get something or they realize they can do something more than they first anticipated. And they may not realize what impact that has until maybe several years later. Mark, we talked about how you came into teaching from the coaching of basketball. And I was a former PE teacher as well, and also a coach, though not basketball. My lack of over 6 foot height would probably curtail that pretty quickly. So I was much better at playing soccer. And I'm a strong believer that, as you are as well, that coaches and athletes as well can actually impart a lot of exceptional learning environments and learning opportunities for students. And so one thing that I know that you've done in the classroom is start to look at giving up what you call control in the classroom. So maybe you can explain a little bit about what does that mean to you, and also what does giving up control mean in your classroom?
Sean, one of the things that I wrote about in the 5-Minute Teacher is I actually looked back on my work as a basketball coach, a few years after I left coaching, and I was working to create that certain environment in my classroom that I thought kids would gravitate to and would say, this is fun to be here. And I reflected on my days as a basketball coach and thought about what a practice looked like. And one of the things I realized is that, I didn't teach in the classroom in the same way that I coached. And although it seems like it should be an obvious connection, I didn't make the connection because I had always done it in that sort of in-the-box way that I think pre-service teachers are taught. you know, that stand and deliver style and having kids practice in traditional ways and not as much interaction and chaos in the class. And I thought about coaching and realized that it is at times a very chaotic, noisy, collaborative environment, and that instruction came in very brief spurts. And it worked, you know, and I thought, wow, what if you could bring that into the classroom and create that sort of noisy, chaotic environment where kids are moving around and maybe they're doing different things but working toward the same goal. And so that's what I did, and it is hard. I think that, you know, teachers really control the word we hear all the time. You know, I was just reading a blog yesterday and somebody said something about you have to have control in the classroom. And even though I was that way for so long, you know, I always flinch when I hear that now and say, you know, when you give up that control and you invite a little bit of chaos into the classroom, that's when learning really begins.
I must admit I'm biased because I'm a former physical education teacher, but I when you were talking, I think back to many of the lessons that I see successful or effective PE teachers teach, and it's the same thing. It's it could be a group of 30, 40 students, and there might be seven or eight things happening inside that gymnasium all at the same time. And it really is articulating what each group or each student needs to achieve something.
I think movement is the key. You know, when you talk about PE, there's so much movement. And that was a really big realization for me. And there's a lot of studies to support it, that kids really need movement, and you know, teachers in the old traditional way just say, hey, sit in your seat and maybe stay there for 20, 30, 40 minutes at a time, and it just really doesn't work.
Now, Joan, you've done a lot of work around classroom culture and positive psychology in the classroom. Is there a way or is there a connection between routines and rituals and resilience and developing a classroom culture that helps students stay positive and focused?
I think that there's a definite connection between positive emotions and creating an environment where kids come and are willing to give of themselves and be there fully. So what I wanted to look at was ways that I bring laughter and playfulness and movement and other elements that give us a positive kind of state of being to see how that would impact students' actual performance and ability to stay focused. So what I did was sort of look at the class jobs in my room. I have a job called Classroom Environment Engineer, and each week a student was assigned to that job. Of course, if they didn't want that job, they could trade the job. But basically, the Classroom Environment Engineer brought in a joke or a story or a video. Of course, the video had to be approved in advance. Very short little bursts of funny things that would be a great buffer for after recess when they came back and they were sort of trying to straggle in and get going. So I think there are a lot of little things that we do that we actually don't realize how powerful they are at bringing kids together. So I started to be an observer, and what I found was that anything that could negate, you know, the heavy stuff kids were bringing in the morning, not to say to minimize them, but to actually allow them to learn how to kind of change the channel, that's a student phrase, in their brain and focus on something else, even though they were coming to school with a lot of worry. So teaching them those skills to be able to change the way a day was going for them and to be able to say, hey, even if I'm upset about something, it's okay for me to laugh at this joke.
And you talked a lot about buffers, you know, buffers to some of the stresses that they're bringing into the classroom, you know, things like humor and curiosity and mindfulness and resilience. Do you have an example about how some of those things get promoted or taught or developed in the classroom?
Yes. So one practice that I've had is a class meeting, and where we actually talk about different feelings. We have kids do a check-in, identify what emotion's going on for them today, and they don't have to talk about it. They could just show a card that reveals how they're doing, and actually just to normalize that we all have a variety of emotions going on at the same time, that there's no right way to be, that sometimes being negative is okay and you can just embrace that. And once you do that and not fight it, you can sort of move on.
It also reminds me what you were talking about and some of the work of another podcast guest we had on a year or so ago, Philip Rodkin from University of Illinois, who talks about the developing classrooms as communities of 30 And so you're not just there, obviously, to learn content or skills, but you're there to learn how to interact in a micro community, and how to persevere, and how to develop, and how to collaborate. Kevin, so we're talking a lot about, you know, student-centered classrooms, and so I'm curious about, you've been a big proponent of social-emotional learning, but how do you see student-focused learning environments making a difference with your students?
Well, I think once we look beyond students into strictly the academic sense, and we start looking at their social-emotional skills, you know, how they get along, how they deal with conflict and things like that. Like Mark was saying, I think when we get to that point, we don't have to rely so much on conformity, because everything that goes on in the classroom is part of the learning, if that makes sense. It's not just the content, but it's everything. It's the relationships and everything that's going on. It's the content and the process, and the interpersonal skills and the intrapersonal skills. And I think after doing it, I've realized that students become to realize that skills, that the content and non-content skills are all important, and they're all interrelated. And once we get to that point, then you have fewer behavior problems, and kids are, you know, actually able to enjoy learning, and they're available to learn. So I think by doing it, it helps the environment, but also helps the students' performance.
Yeah. And you're also, as I think many of you are mentioning, you're putting the onus back on the student for their own learning and their own development. And they're not just passengers or clients, but they're part of this environment and part of this community. Ali, I mentioned the work of Bonnie Bernard a little while ago, and I think some of the interest that you have as well fits back into it. She talked about having every student believe in themselves and have high expectations. And I know that you've talked a lot about having students believe that they can achieve the goals that we set for them, or even that they set for themselves. And so I wonder if you can speak a little bit about how you start to set some of those goals and have students believe that they can achieve.
Certainly. Expectancy is so important for every student, and it begins with really strong relationships. Teachers taking the time to get to know their students, to get to know what their long-term goals are, but then being able to scaffold back from those long-term goals and set very short-term goals where students can see their success over time. So often our students look in the distance at that long-term goal, and it just seems so far away and so impossible that that's frequently when they shut down. So having a teacher who can develop the relationships with kids, but then help a student show their progress from point A to point B, so that student then believes that it's possible to get to point C, and then it's possible to eventually get to that long-term goal.
You mentioned there about the role of the teacher and in developing relationships. So I want you to think back to your school days. And is there a teacher or an adult that you knew in school who made a difference in your life and learning? And it might be someone that inspired you to move into education, or it might be someone that allowed you to see your potential to move into another field.
Yeah, this is Mark. I'll go on this one. This one means a lot to me, Sean, because I'll tell you, I wish that in my adult life I had been smart enough to reflect back to my childhood, all the way back to sixth grade, and remember what this teacher meant to me, because I think I would have been a much better teacher right away, instead of being that sort of in-the-box teacher that, you know, I think is just not the way to be. I had a teacher in sixth grade who... You know, I mean, and not to date myself, but we're going back a long time. And, you know, this guy was, he was just way ahead of his time. I think he was a visionary, because he did so much of the kinds of things that we're talking about, you know, in this conversation today. Really worked with the whole child before whole child was a popular phrase. And he did student-centered learning before I think anybody even knew what student-centered learning was. And it was just, that was the one teacher. And honestly, from K all the way through 12, and this, I guess, is a sad statement about education back when I was a student, this is the only teacher that I could say really made a huge difference in my life, because I felt like he made me feel important, and he made learning seem important to me. And after that, I think grade 7 through 12, it was back to, you know, the stand and deliver and do a worksheet and that kind of stuff. And I really lost interest. So if I had had the insight when I became a teacher to reflect back and say, boy, I should be like Mr. Peterson, was his name, I think I would have been a much better teacher.
Yeah, and I think in the in this era of full disclosure and praising people, I think if you can remember the person's name, I think there's absolutely no harm in mentioning the teacher's name or the person's name, because we're highlighting and celebrating them making a difference in your lives as well.
I have a similar story, actually, to Mark, in that there's one particular teacher who stands out. And in my early years of teaching, I really didn't understand what a gift his classroom had been to me, because it was such an aberration from the other classrooms that I had been in that I actually thought, that was the 70s, and this guy who let us sit under tables and make our learning forts and do our projects together, and this is my fourth grade teacher, Mr. Kauser. I remember my parents thinking, absolutely no learning is going on in there. I don't know what they're doing. But I came out of that year so much more confident as a learner, feeling that my teacher cared about me, being able to work with other students who were at different places in their learning. It was such a gift to me. And when I first became a teacher, my model for teaching was the control model, because that's the model that I predominantly, saw. So it took me a while to appreciate the gift and the wonderful mentorship of my fourth grade teacher.
There are two individuals that I immediately think of. The first is Ms. Collier, and she took the time to get to know me as an individual, to understand what motivated me, to know when I was having a really great day versus a really bad one. And I remember, even as a high school student, that was just so important to me, and it made me want to always do better in her class. And the second individual that I think about is Mr. Marquardt. He was one of my high school English teachers, and he was the first teacher to really give me a bad grade. And it stuck with me, because my work with Mr. Marquardt, it wasn't about the grade. He was the first teacher to really teach me that it's about the learning, and it's about always getting better and growing. And that's something that continues to stick with me, not only as a teacher, but now also as a school leader.
I think it's interesting listening that a lot of the teachers that people are mentioning aren't the traditional type teachers, as Mark said, the stand and deliver teachers. And it's interesting how the parents' perspective on what their kids were doing in school wasn't always that positive, but what the kids were feeling was positive. It's kind of an interesting observation.
Yeah. And do you have somebody, Kevin, that inspired you?
I talk with my brother, who's a college professor, about this all the time, and neither of us can put our finger on one specific teacher, or a couple teachers even, that made a particularly big impact. So we've come to decide that they've all made an equally positive impact on us.
Well, we won't ask you to name every single teacher you had then, because we could be here for a little while longer. Yeah, and when I think of that question as well about who inspired me, I also think back to my teachers back in what was primary school in grade 6 and grade 7, Mr. Bartlett and Mr. Thorne, and many of the things that you were all talking about developing relationships and being very open-minded. Also expecting and demanding you to do things, but in a very student-empowered way. And I think it's interesting also that many people talked about elementary school teachers or middle school teachers, and I think it's when you make those connections, those relationships. And that was we just finished, by the way, as many people may have known, our Whole Child Symposium about a month ago. And the last session that we had was a student panel, and we asked them about what schools in the future should look like if they were able to design or invent them. And obviously the concept of having student choice and developing their own personal interests and personal skills came through loud and clear. But the other element that came through loud and clear was having schools that felt like a community, where everybody was accepted, where it was more of a coffee shop kind of discussion. And so those relationships came through loud and clear as well. And I think we're getting the same message from our panel here. To end up with, then, I'm going to ask you two questions to finish up this wonderful podcast. And one is, what inspires you as an educator? and also what's the most important thing about being an educator? And they may be the same answer, but we'll leave them as two questions.
Okay, I'll go again. Smart. What inspires me, first of all, is people like the ones that we're talking to today. I think that teachers in general are inspirational because I think they do the most honorable job in the world. But I really appreciate educators who have done something already, have been in the classroom, have practical experience, have researched best practices, and then are doing other things outside of the classroom to make education better. And, you listen to this panel and, everyone is doing something beyond just teaching the kids, which is obviously the most important thing, but then helping other educators to be better. And I think that people, especially who work with the tough kids, the reluctant learners, I really appreciate them as well. So I would say that's what inspires me. What was the second part of the question, Sean?
Second part was, what's the most important thing about being an educator?
That's easy for me. I would say change. I think that we are far too static in methods and our approach and philosophy of education. And to me, the most important thing is change. We have to have more conversations like the one we're having now, and keep writing great books and putting great books out there for educators, and do everything possible to inspire teachers to continue to change. And that's not to say that all teachers are bad, because I think there's tons of great teachers right now, like the ones we've described, but everyone needs to continue to evolve because our world continues to evolve.
I'll jump in. I think, first of all, I think with people like Mark and Allie and Joan that are writing and promoting their message, people like me who don't have as much experience in the field, change is happening, and I'm a product of people like them who are willing to share and willing to, encourage other people to try things new and to promote change. So I'd like to thank them. But what inspires me most is when kids are having fun learning, because when they're having fun, I'm having fun. And I think at that point, we're all willing to try new things and maybe push the envelope just a little bit more. So I think the fun aspect inspires me. And the most important thing about being an educator, one of the things for me is humility, reminding ourselves it's about them and not us.
What inspires me is the students, all of their authenticity and their messiness and their greatness that they bring every day. No day is predictable. And that's really inspiring and energizing to me. It's what gets me up every morning. And along those lines, what the most important thing about being an educator is to me are opportunities like this morning, being able to dialogue with colleagues in the field to push our own practice. And as Mark said, continue to change, because that's what our students need. They need us as adults to be willing to grow and change with them if we're going to be able to move them forward.
And Allie, I think you took the word right off my paper that I'd written down here. Students definitely inspire me the most. Students who have been through things I can't even imagine. Students who come kicking and screaming and believing that school isn't for them, and seeing them turn around and be excited to be there and proud of their learning is just really inspiring. I think one of the most important things for me about being an educator is continuously reinforcing that it's the relationships, it's knowing my students, it's knowing how they're feeling and their view on what's going on in the classroom is so critical. And I love using technology and all that in the classroom, but I think that we have to continuously remind ourselves that being present and mindful and looking kids in the eye is still the most important thing about being with children.
Wonderful. I often talk to people about how, and I think you've all summarized this in your own ways, that going into education, it may not be the most financially rewarding career that you can choose, but it's definitely one of the most ethically or morally rich careers that you can choose. And I think just the fact that the passion and the interest that the four of you have shown, and also your career paths as well, how you've all moved into education and the reasons why you've done that certainly highlights that idea as well. So I want to thank my guests, Mark Barnes, Kevin Parr, Ali Rodman and Joan Young for joining me today. And also thank you for joining us on the Whole Child podcast. Learn how other educators make a difference in students' lives and learning with the summer 2014 issue of Educational Leadership Magazine, available beginning June 16 at www.ascd.org/el. This digital issue gives you instant access to stories about individuals, teams, schools, and even a US state that are passionate about teaching and learning. And in a series of videos, you'll hear from Robin Jackson, Barudi Kefele, Doug Fisher, Jeffrey Benson, Michael Ford, Marilee Springer, Myron Dwick, Mike Fisher, and Eric Scheninger on becoming a teacher and how they make a difference. Access these articles and videos and many others to inspire you over the summer, and download the free Educational Leadership app in iTunes, Google Play, or the Amazon App Store. And if you do not currently receive Educational Leadership Magazine, subscribe now to stay informed about new ideas and best practices for educators, often from educators like you've heard today on this panel. If you have a comment or a question about this episode, we'd love to hear from you, and please send an email to wholechild@ascd.org or leave a comment on our blog. And be sure to visit us at wholechildeducation.org to learn more about how you can support the Whole Child Initiative. Check us out on Facebook, search for Whole Child and like us. I'm Sean Slade, and as always, let's keep working to ensure that each child in each school and in each community is healthy, safe, engaged, supported, and challenged. Take care.